Now, as I mentioned, today is the last day of autumn. Winter kicks off tomorrow, and we've finally seen the end to that kind of what felt like a long summer. Right up until last week, it was warm, but then it did get cool last week. So it is finally getting chilly, and, you know, there is nothing better, I find, than during the cold months of just curling up nice and warm in bed. But, you know, it's not that easy for a lot of people in Sydney. You know, there are a lot of people who are sleeping rough, you know, sleeping on the streets, and they'll be doing that right through this upcoming winter. So who are they? What do they do? How do they get through this, you know, this difficult weather? Joining me on the line is Digby Hughes from Homelessness New South Wales. Good morning, Digby.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So, well, look, when I'm heading into the 2SER studios, it's quite early in the morning, and I'll often see, you know, homeless people, people sleeping rough. Do we have an idea of, you know, who these people are? Are they rough sleepers? Are they couch surfers who just can't find anywhere to go? Do we know breakdowns of the demographic of Sydney's homeless?
We have a fairly good breakdown. We know that the numbers of rough sleepers in Sydney is increasing. The City of Sydney does a street count twice a year in August and in February, so we get a comparison number between winter and summer. And last February when we did the count, we assisted with them, a few of our people went out and volunteered as well, the count was the highest it had ever been since they started doing the count.
What, why is that? Is that rising house prices in Sydney? Do we know why that is?
Oh, look, it's partly to do with the cost of, or the lack of affordable housing is a huge driver of homelessness. So for a lot of the people, we know that for a lot of women escaping, you know, family and domestic violence, so they, when they get a chance to escape, they might have to end up on the streets because all the crisis services are full as well. So the other part of the count we do is to see how much room there is in the crisis services, and they were 98% full. So there's nowhere, you know, to use a biblical analogy, no room at the inn. Can't get in, so they end up on the street.
So they're on the street. I mean, during these cooler months, how do they deal? How do they stay warm?
It's a real struggle. It's an absolute struggle for them. We, among the facts we do, and unfortunately we do know that people who are rough sleepers die on average 20 years before the rest of the population. So they don't survive, is one way of putting it.
So you're mentioning there, you know the crisis shelters and the shelters for the homeless, they're just jam-packed. How does it work? Is there some kind of queue system or?
It's a first in, best dressed generally.
Right. And how long can they stay there for?
Depending on the shelter. A lot of some of the women's shelters, you know, in theory 3 months, but there's no affordable housing to exit people out to. So it's affordable housing drives the people into homelessness. And then it also causes the blockage so people can't leave the crisis services to get back out. So the services are excellent doing work about, you know, if it's for older men, they can do work about drug and alcohol. They can do work with, you know, the women's shelters do fantastic work about building resilience on, you know, around family and domestic violence. But they've got nowhere to exit people to.
So how long do people stay in these shelters for?
For months and months.
So basically, they're then kind of trapped, as it were, in this shelter. And I suppose there is that stigma of being homeless that you can't go and get a job.
No. Well, if you're in a shelter, it's probably a bit easier to get a job because at least you have a street address. But if you're living on the street, then, you know, getting a job, finding employment, getting education, training, all the things that we need, that we know that people need to actually break the cycle of homelessness, is hugely problematic because they don't have a street address.
Are we doing anything for these people who are sleeping rough? And, you know, it is getting cold. Are there services set up that can, you know, go out, hand out blankets, things like that?
There's a lot of services that go to hand out blankets. Down in Woolloomooloo, we have, and around through the city, we have a lot of food services go out so people get a meal. So that's very good. There's a lot of blankets around there. Mission Beach does some excellent work. A range of services. Nemai, who are doing fantastic outreach work, they go and, you know, making contact with people to find out what their needs are, but to actually then get them off the street. And without the supply of affordable housing, it's almost mission impossible.
Mm. If you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Digby Hughes. He's a policy and research officer at Homelessness New South Wales, talking to me about our homeless as we head into winter. Things start getting cold. Now, Digby, I remember reading a book years ago based in the UK, and it broke down homeless people basically into three groups. You had those who were drug addicted, you had those who were alcohol addicted, and those who are the mentally ill. Is that a large percentage of, you know, our homeless?
That is, of the rough sleepers, that's a large part of the rough sleeping population.
Mm.
But we also know that the mental health issues actually arise from living on the street.
Right, yes.
Yes, that makes sense to me. There's been, you know, not much research done on this, but there's some very good research a few years ago down from Melbourne, from an academic down there at one of the universities, and 50% of the people who we interviewed living on the street had developed their mental health issue living on the street.
And I suppose you probably have that fourth group now. In the last few years, we're seeing this kind of rise of domestic violence as well.
Well, domestic violence has been around, unfortunately, for far too long and continued. What we do have these days is far more recognition and understanding of the issue.
Yes.
So yeah. I think that's, you know. But we also know that women, we've got growing demographics of homeless people out there, older single women, and these are women 60 plus, and they've hit retirement without much, and they're in private rental. They don't have a huge superannuation because they haven't actually been a full-time worker. They've been a carer. They've been looking after the children, looking after aging parents, in and out of the workforce. They hit retirement without much large, you know, without a large nest egg in private rental, and after a few years, their nest egg has run out.
Mm. So where does Homelessness New South Wales come into it? How do you guys, you're mentioning a whole bunch of different services. Do you help overlook a whole bunch of different services?
Well, we're called a peak body, so we have members who are across the state, so different services from all over the state. So, you know, some of the large, very large faith-based ones, you know, Vinnie, Salvation Army, through to, you know, small regional district ones in, you know, in some country towns. So the whole range of services, we work with them and with the government try and get a better service system and better outcomes for people who are homeless.
Mm. Now, I suppose one of the other things that a lot of people listening will be thinking is when you see a homeless person, say, begging in the street, I think it's probably one of the things that your parents always told you growing up is, oh, you know, don't give money to them. They're just going to spend it on drugs and alcohol. If you do want to help someone who is on the street, what's the best way to do it? Is it to give them, you know, slip them a $5 note?
Look, that in many cases, yes. In many cases, that is a good thing to do. There's all of the services, you know, need additional support. You know, majority of services get government funding, but they put their own money in as well. They you know, we're about to have the Vinnie Sleep Out, CEO Sleep Out. Last weekend was Red Shield Appeal for Salvation Army. All the, you know, so the large ones do it. All the small services do it as well. They all have to do their own fundraising. So they spend more than they get from the government, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So if you can find a service that you can support in your area, large or small, faith-based or non-faith-based, up to what you want to do, you can support them financially, or you can actually go and, you know, volunteer and see what they need doing.
Mm. And I suppose the volunteering, you know, I've got friends who've done it, and they said it is such a fulfilling thing to do.
Oh, look, volunteering anything is fantastic. Mm. Any volunteering. But other things people can do is inform their community about the issue. Go and talk to their local state and federal MP. You know, we're not far from a federal election, and you know, the campaign seems to be dragging on. But, you know, but go and talk to your candidates and say, I'm concerned about homelessness. What are you going to do about homelessness? If you are my federal MP, what are you going to do? If people get and did that, that would be fantastic.
Digby, thank you so much for your time this morning.
No worries, thank you very much.
That's Digby Hughes there. He's a policy and research officer at Homelessness New South Wales, talking to us about how our homeless are faring as we head into winter and what we can do. But look, he's spot on. Go and help. Go help at a soup kitchen. I've got tons of friends who do it. I really should do it. Now, I'm going to do it.